Coming up on Fronteras, officials in the border city of Tijuana have been trying to draw American tourists back by promoting its new food, art, and culture scenes. But many of Tijuana's older, kitschier tourist draws are still trying to make it, including this one.
La Hello Kitty, los superhéroes, el hombre araña, Superman.
The production of those popular ceramic piggy banks, they're one of the few things still manufactured in Tijuana for sale locally. Something else made in Mexico, tequila's cousin, mezcal.
It's wonderfully smooth. Yes, it's great, powerful, smoky taste.
For a group of villages in Mexico, an unexpected rise in the popularity of this relatively unknown traditional drink is bringing some people home. That story next, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among 7 public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Mexico swears in a new president on Saturday, and the hope is Enrique Peña Nieto will be able to boost the economy and stabilize security. Both might be achieved if the nation ends its war on the drug cartels. Reporter Lauren Madelon has the story from northern Chihuahua, where citizens explain their hopes for a new government and their yearning to live without terror.
The people are friendly and welcoming in the remote village of Manuel Benavides, a beautiful place sandwiched between two mountain ranges about 2.5 hours southeast of the border town of Presidio, Texas. But everyone's afraid. No one wants to speak. Like much of Chihuahua, like much of Mexico, the truth is elusive, opaque, and silence is the best policy. The old is becoming new again. The PRI returns to power after a 12-year absence. This village was once a warehouse for Pablo Acosta, the drug lord who ruled this part of northern Mexico with a brutally iron fist until he was killed by Mexican federales. Cartels still are the ultimate power here. That said, people here don't like former President Felipe Calderón. Here's Calderón defending his strategy to confront the cartels with force.
Golpeando y golpeando con firmeza a las organizaciones criminales.
Calderón's decision will be judged by history. Against the backdrop of traumatizing violence fueled by the American appetite for drugs, people expect the PRI, which ruled for 71 years until 2000, will leverage its documented connections to the cartels in the past to forge an unspoken peace today. Inside a cantina, norteño music blares, and people are deep in conversation. It's a motley group, ranchers, and a couple of men who say they've spent time in U.S. prisons for smuggling heroin, and beside them, a bilingual police officer who looks forward to the PRI's return.
They'll talk to the cartel to see if they could settle or to see what happens.
You think that's a good thing?
Yeah.
I met with one man who, like many here, just doesn't trust politicians. But he says when it comes to managing violence, the PRI is much better positioned than any other party.
Pienso que va a controlar porque según ellos tienen más experiencia y
they're going to control things, he says. They have the experience. I met with Jorge Castañeda in Mexico City. He's a former Secretary of Foreign Relations who opposed Calderón's decision to go to war.
He does not have a definition of victory. What is victory in the war on drugs? No more drugs, drugs going through somewhere else to the United States, fewer drugs, a new modus vivendi with the drug cartels. I don't know what victory is. And thirdly, I don't see the exit strategy. How do you get out of this once you're in it?
A Chihuahua state politician who'd only speak if I left my recording gear outside his home said, quote, after politics is finished, I want to be alive. They, meaning the PRI, won't eliminate violence, but they will manage it. Howard Campbell is a Mexico security expert at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's the author of Drug War Zone, Frontline Dispatches from the Streets of El Paso and Juarez.
And the PRI in the past proved very adept at cutting deals with drug cartels and other criminal groups to try to have them stick to their criminal activity but not to commit homicides in public. So I think there is some hope that the violence and homicide rate in Mexico will go down.
Today, the village of Manuel Benavides yearns for the good old bad days when the PRI's political monopoly gave them the power to divide Mexico into territories and make sure violence was controlled. That political monopoly is over. Mexico is now a multi-party nation. But history speaks, and citizens seem willing to tolerate the potential for corruption if the PRI can revive past practices and leverage connections to the cartels. I'm Lorne Madelon in northern Chihuahua.
Ever since fears of drug violence stem the flow of American visitors to Tijuana, the city's been trying to revive tourism by promoting its new food, art, and culture scenes. But Frontera's reporter Adrian Florido says that even as officials promote a newer, hipper Tijuana, vestiges of the city's old tourism economy are still alive and kicking, like plaster piggy banks.
Because of this new emerging Tijuana, today Americans waiting in line to cross back into the U.S. might have a nice bottle of Baja red wine with them, maybe a print from one of the many galleries that have opened here. But as you sit in that long line of cars, Martin Montellano would like you to consider one last souvenir. How about a plaster piggy bank? Just $10, less if you haggle.
La Hello Kitty, los superhéroes, el hombre araña, Superman.
They come in dozens of characters. The latest box office hits like Batman or Spider-Man. He has a Mickey Mouse, though it has a kind of creepy gaze. An oversized Tweety Bird. There's a Virgin Mary. Or hey, Christmas is coming. How about a Santa Claus? They're all displayed in neat rows at his merchant's booth. It's one among many that line a little traffic island surrounded by the cars that are inching toward the border. Almost all of the vendors here sell these piggy banks. He says he's been selling piggy banks for 30 years, his dad for about 60 years. Indeed, these piggy banks have been a mainstay of Tijuana's tourist scene for decades. College revelers out for a night of debauchery, families taking weekend trips down the Baja coast. When times were good and they still had 100 pesos left to blow before crossing back into the U.S., why not buy a piggy bank? He says he used to sell up to 200 or 300 in a single weekend. But the violence fears that drove tourists away in the last decade took their toll on piggy bank sales, as they did on all businesses here. Now, Montellano says he's lucky to sell 40 in a weekend. Tourists are returning to Tijuana, but most of the people crossing the border are still commuters. Still, in the hilly residential neighborhoods that rise above the city's downtown, piggy bank production is churning. Behind his modest home in a working-class neighborhood, Edmundo González employs 4 workers at his piggy bank workshop. They mix plaster and pour it into molds. Then they shake the molds by hand until the plaster dries. One worker peels a mold away to reveal a perfectly formed white plaster donkey. He carves a coin slot into it, then sets it out to dry along with hundreds of other Disney characters, superheroes, and baby Jesuses piled in the courtyard or on wooden shelves. Nearby, another worker is using a paint gun.
Pues es el modo de vivir de la gente, de trabajar. Hay unos que los que por decir.
González says many people make a living either making or selling plaster piggy banks. A street vendor can sell one for as little as $3 and still make some profit on what he paid a wholesale producer like González. It's a small profit.
En lugar de trabajar en una fábrica, porque una fábrica no se gana.
But González says people selling piggy banks still make more than they would if they worked in one of the many foreign manufacturing plants in Tijuana, where you can make less than $10 a day. In fact, González's daughter has a workshop behind her house next door. So do neighbors down the street and in surrounding neighborhoods. Plaster's cheap, so that keeps production costs low, and so does a general disregard for Disney and other trademarks. On Fridays and Saturdays, pickup trucks filled to the brim with piggy banks descend these hills, and producers deliver them to vendors' booths near the border. Cristina González, no relation to Edmundo, has a shop here. She says Christmas and nativity figures are in high demand right now because of the holidays. And that's one of the benefits of having so many local producers, even if it drives prices down. A special request can be cast in plaster within days, and stock is easier to replenish. Other goods for sale here near the border, like sombreros and leather sandals, they're shipped from the interior of Mexico. Many of the Aztec print blankets for sale in Tijuana are made in China. Yeah, China. But plaster piggy banks, they're produced right here in Tijuana. And Edmundo González says that's a contribution he's proud of. Reporting from Tijuana, I'm Adrian Florido.
Well, if piggy banks aren't your thing, tequila, anyone?
It's wonderfully smooth. Yes, it's great, powerful, smoky taste.
Mezcal, tequila's cousin, is playing a part in reverse migration to Mexico. That story next on Fronteras. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. In many villages in rural Mexico, family life has been torn apart by the exodus of adult men and some women to the U.S. The Pew Research Center says about 12 million Mexicans, about 15% of Mexico's labor force, are in the U.S., both legally and illegally. But for one group of villages in Mexico, an unexpected rise in the popularity of a relatively unknown traditional drink is bringing some people home. Lauren Madelon explains.
It's after midnight at Bar Añejo in Manhattan. Añejo means aged. On this night, in this place, it means the nectar of a Mexican plant that's been lovingly grown, and you're about to sip it.
We are having a midnight mezcal de Oaxaca.
Mezcal is tequila's cousin. Both are products of two things, the agave plant and astonishing skill. But unlike tequila, mezcal isn't mass-produced. Each batch is unique.
What is that?
And most of the people here have never tasted it.
It's wonderfully smooth. Yes, it's great, powerful, smoky taste.
Mezcal bars are increasingly popular in the U.S. in cities like New York, Austin, Denver, and Los Angeles. The Mexican agency that certifies mezcal says exports have gone from 100,000 gallons to 170,000 in the last 2.5 years. But this isn't a story about where mezcal ends up or why it's in fashion. This is about where mezcal's made, how it's made, and how an unexpected thirst for mezcal in the U.S. is bringing some people home to Mexico. The village of San Luis del Rio, in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca, is out there. They say God won't find you if you slip off the twisting gravel roads that look like ribbon on the mountains, the Sierra Madre. Getting there is easy if you have a sturdy four-wheel drive. From the state capital, Oaxaca City, you snake through small towns and settlements. Then you climb along a steep dirt road, passing the odd iguana and carpets of cactus. 2 hours later, you're in San Luis. Jorge Mendez is 27, a mezcal producer, or mezcalero. We and our families depend on mezcal, he says. His face is burnished by the sun. One hand grips a machete. The other adjusts a faded blue baseball cap. In his family's still, where the mezcal is made, a horse pulls a stone wheel over chunks of roasted agave. The mash under the wheel is fermented and then double distilled over a smoky fire. There used to be 1,000 people in this village. Now, Mendez says, half of them live in the U.S. With all those people gone, it's hard to find skilled mezcal makers. He says almost everyone who left would be helping to produce mezcal were they home. It's really hard for one person, he says. You have to harvest the plant, gather firewood, grind the plant, and distill it. But these days, Jorge Mendez has help. That's Jorge's brother, Fabian. People will return, he says. Fabian lived illegally in the U.S. for a time. Then one day his family called and said, come home, there's work now.
The hope is that if mezcal's popularity keeps rising, everyone will come home to work. After all, your friends and family are here. This is your village. It's your own country. If you're Mexican, you have to come back.
Part of the reason Fabian could come back is because of a guy named Pedro Quintanilla. He buys Marca Negra mezcal from the Mendez family.
At first, it was intended to be a business, but now it's become much more than that.
Unlike tequila, which is mass-marketed, mezcal production is a mostly homegrown cottage industry. Individual buyers, like Quintanilla, buy directly from each family and sell directly to a distributor. The idea, he says, is that producers, like the Mendez family, pocket more of the proceeds.
All the profits come down, all the way down to the producer, who are people that have been neglected and forgotten for ages, for centuries. And economically, it's amazing because they're generating jobs. People are coming back from the U.S., and everybody's happy. They rejoin with their families. Everybody wins.
These days, more and more Mexicans are returning home. That's not always because work is waiting, but because a sputtering U.S. economy doesn't provide the opportunity it once did. A recent study by the Pew Research Center says about the same number of Mexicans left the United States last year as arrived. That hasn't happened in 40 years. In San Luis, at least there's some work waiting.
El mercado está creciendo.
Another buyer, Jorge Ramirez, says the market is growing. He's so bullish about mezcal's prospects that he started a co-op for producers. But something else may be at play as well.
Prefieren comer, como dice la gente, comer frijoles en su casa.
Using an age-old rural expression, he says Mexicans would rather eat beans in their own house than live a precarious life elsewhere. I'm Lorne Matalon in Oaxaca, Mexico.
The Federal Immigration Detention Center in El Paso, Texas, is breaking in a new intercultural faith center. Monica Ortiz Uribe reports it's the first of its kind in the country.
A single file of women detainees with their hair pulled back and no makeup step into a small rectangular room. The space is simple, concrete floors and bare beige walls. Only the back wall is covered with an image of a seaside sunset. Soft music plays from an iPhone hooked up to a set of portable speakers.
Buenas tardes, bienvenidas.
Sister Rita Specht, the assistant chaplain here, welcomes the women. She will lead them in a two-hour spiritual program meant to help manage stress.
Mostly what I would do would be to listen to their stories and try to provide some sense of hope in their time of waiting here.
This is a space that's open to all religious faiths, Christians, Mormons, Scientologists, and even those who worship the Santa Muerte, or the Sacred Death. Before this center opened in October, detainees had to practice their religious activities in a noisy gym or in the cafeteria. In this new space, finding peace is much easier. One detainee, Elena, tells the chaplain, "We can distract ourselves here. It's difficult in the barracks, stuck between four walls. At least here, we can reflect and meditate." In El Paso, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
As we heard earlier in the program, many tourists stopped visiting Tijuana in the wake of recent years of drug violence. But now a blossoming local music scene is attracting fans from both sides of the border. From our Fronteras desk in Tijuana, Aaron Siegel reports.
By 2009, Tijuana was a shadow of its former self. Once known for bars and clubs, the city's nightlife had ground to a halt. Drug violence scared away tourists and kept most locals indoors.
When we started doing music, nobody was doing anything in the city. It was around the time that there was violence, so everything stopped, the parties died.
Ruben Torres is a producer with the Tijuana trio Los Macuanos. He's worked hard to help grow the city's independent music scene.
For the 3 years that we've been doing this, we persevered and we're like, well, we're gonna do this. It doesn't matter that nobody cares. And now people start caring.
On any given evening in Tijuana, it's easy enough to find banda music or pumping clubs blasting pop. But certain new sounds, like ruido son, are unique to the city.
Tijuana is really Mexican. People maybe think it's not that Mexican because it's so bocho, but it's actually like the, I think it's kind of like the future of Mexico.
Events like the All My Friends Music Festival attracted hundreds of young people to Tijuana in mid-November. That included busloads of Americans from San Diego and Los Angeles. A showcase of more than 30 bands performed on three stages. The genres crossed boundaries, featuring dubstep, punk rock, jazz, cumbia, no wave, norteño, and more. Tijuana band Santos Balcones Durango played a rousing cover of the classic Lou Reed song, Take a Walk on the Wild Side. Meanwhile, on a second stage, Tijuana resident Marco Antonio Apodaca, known locally as DJ Yelram Selecta, mixed tribal huarachero, a robust electro blend heavily influenced by tropical cumbia, traditional Mexican folk songs, and a touch of dubstep. The ongoing Mexican project Norte Sonoro also came to Tijuana this fall. Six international producers worked side by side with local musicians. Brooklyn resident Jace Clayton, known as DJ Rupture, is also a music journalist. He's written extensively about the modern Mexican music scene and also curated artists for this year's Norte Sonoro.
So yeah, so the basic idea behind Norte Sonoro is to bring in a handful of international producers to come and work with like local and regional acoustic musicians from Mexico.
Clayton says that getting an on-the-ground feel for local sound is key.
And so the idea is it's not just like some easy sampling where you pulled off the internet, you know, or some cheesy remix. The idea is really getting to have a feel for the social context that gave rise to these sounds that we're working with and trying to engage in that in a kind of responsible way as we're learning about the city, as we're meeting each other. It's a really interesting and fertile time for Mexican music. And actually, that's one of the biggest things. It's like, especially in Tijuana, I think it's the reputation is of sort of like a dangerous city. It's actually this crazy, like, creative hotbed for different people doing really exciting new music and art.
This year, international artists from New York City, Brazil, Canada, and Venezuela spent time with Tijuana's own Los Macuanos.
Okay, so my name is Monica. I'm from Monterrey, and I'm part of Normal, which is a music and arts promoter from Monterrey. We look through music that sounds from the region. We have Movimiento Alterado, we have Corrido Sierreño, Banda Sinaloense, and some indigenous music that is very present in the region. So we just decided to choose traditional sounds, local sounds that are very important and that are very big in this area, not only in Tijuana, but in nearby areas like Ensenada, Mexicali.
At the end of the musical residency, Norte Sonoro artists collaborate and produce a brand new digital EP. It's available for download on that last borderless frontier, the internet, free to the public in Mexico, the United States, and beyond. In Tijuana, I'm Erin Siegel.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Find Fronteras online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. And I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thank you for listening.